Right? Can God create a rock that he can't lift? Okay? No. No. Okay, that's one possibility. What's the other possibility?
Yes. Ozzy said yes.
Okay.
He'll lift it anyway.
He'll lift it anyway. Okay. So I'm going to try to share this machlokes, this debate about, I think there's a major debate of whether, there's a major debate whether God can create a rock that he can't lift. And why this is important, actually.
I heard you speak about it.
Oh, you heard
this,
it? Okay.
This debate happened during Zoom school.
Okay.
Nothing about it. Is this from the DAF? Like, what is
no,
this
no, no. So from? I have this book, this Machshel book, where I have all my sources from. So one of these questions is, it's called The Omnipotence Paradox. That the paradox, if God is omnipotent, can God destroy himself, right? Can God, is that limiting God's power if... Right? If you're asked, can God destroy himself?
We did this in the
It's the old adage. Nothing's impossible. The mere fact is thinking impossible.
Right. So we're going to see. I have a little more of this, Josh, than what I showed before. So the Rambam says, right? It's really a question, is God bound by logic? That's really the question. Is God bound by logic? That's really the question. We have certain logical principles that we believe, right? Is God bound by that, or is he beyond logical principles? Right, and you see that can have, we're going to ask this question, but that has like major implications for how we look at God in this world and other issues we'll see at the end of this year. So I brought you the translations. The Rambam says, for example, we do not ascribe to God the power of doing what is impossible. And also, by the way, I'm going to say something on the Parsha also, but just the Parsha share I gave, something I think that's related to this question also. In any case, the Rambam in the book says, we don't ascribe to God the power of doing what is impossible. God cannot do, or God does not do, I'm not sure, cannot do, God does not do what is impossible. No thinking man denies the truth of this maxim. Only those who have no idea of logic ignore this maxim. In other words, if you're logical, then obviously God can't do that which is impossible. All philosophers consider it impossible for one substratum to have at the same moment two opposite properties. Can't have something which is one of the opposite of the other. Likewise, it is impossible that God should produce a being like himself, right? Can God produce a being like himself? God is only one. So is that a lack of God's power that he can't create a duplicate of himself? But if he does, a principle of God is that he's only one, right? So he says, can he annihilate himself, corporify, that makes him to a body, or change himself? The power of God is not assumed to extend to any of these impossibilities. So he says, the Rambam's of the view that God is bound by logic. The Rashba, he sort of fleshes this out. The Rashba is not Rashba, just to point out, it's not only like the Rambam, these hardcore rationalists. The Rashba was someone, he was the one who thought that the Rambam's, that he made that ban on all secular studies. I think we said a few sessions ago, you have to be 25 years or older, because he was concerned that all these people who are going up the derech when they're reading all this secular philosophy. So he's not like a hardcore rationalist. So he says, to me, there are two types of impossibilities. The first, which is inherently necessary and logical, includes such things as the side of a square exceeding its diagonal. Right? Any math people here? Okay, right? Okay, right? That doesn't work, right? Yeah, we're good? Okay, 1 point, whatever. A squared, B squared, okay. Right? Or an event having both occurred and not occurred, and many other similar examples. These things are inherently, absolutely impossible and not conceivably possible. These things are inherently not possible. The second, however, is not inherently impossible, but is so from our perspective due to our limited wisdom. Certain things that we think are impossible, but they're not necessarily. We have not seen a rock exude water, the sea temporarily split, and subsequently return to its normal state. The sun and the moon remain stationary and cease orbiting. The sun regress in its path, and many other things, including the resuscitation of the dead, Tchiyas HaMesim. Yet these things are impossible only from our perspective due to the limited wisdom of all creatures and their impotence with respect to altering the natural order. But for God, they're not impossible. Indeed, he certainly is able to do such things, for we may not ascribe any deficiency or lassitude to his strength and wisdom, since he and his wisdom are one, and we cannot understand his wisdom until we understand his essence. So, in other words, he's saying there are certain things that we think are impossible. We can sort of imagine that it could be possible. I mean, well, we believe in Tchiyas HaMesim, right? We believe how does that work? That's not something that's inherently impossible, right? That's different than saying, Or is it A squared plus B squared is not C squared, right? There seems to be a difference between that. So there's something which we think are is impossible and certain things which is impossible that even God as word cannot do. The counter argument to this, so like that's like the logical approach. I don't want to say the other approach is the illogical approach, but it means that maybe God is beyond logic. You know, it's interesting, it's like, it depends how you understand this, right? The Rambam, like the next one, isn't God beyond logic? Because God created everything. God created everything, right? The Rambam in Hilchot Yesodei Torah, Perek Aleph Halacha Aleph says, Yesodei Yesodot Vamud HaChachamot Leida She'esha Matsui Rishon. There's one original creator being, V'hu Mamtzi Kol Nimtzai. He created everything. V'chol Nimtzaim Mishamayim Va'aretz Ma She'beneim Lo Nimtzu Ela Mimetat Himatzo. Anything that exists, all of existence comes from God. So if you think about it, if you think about this, God created logical laws, right? So God created logical laws, so he could create illogical laws. No? What do you say about that? In other words, if God creates, are logical laws existence? Are logical laws part of existence? So if God created logical laws, can he then create illogical laws? Am I being too deep here, or am I? What would you say to that?
Feels like some redefinition of what existence or what reality is.
Okay.
You would say, right? God could have made 2 + 2 = 5, but then that would be like a difference.
Right. That's my next question, right?
Oh,
you saw, right?
Yeah.
How do you view that, right? In other words, you say, can God make 2 + 2 = 5?
Like that's really. Yeah, but then it won't equal 4 anymore.
Can God make 2 + 2 = 4 and 5? In other words, is the equation of, this is sort of the question, is the equation, also secular philosophers dealt with this question, is the equation 2 + 2 = 4 a logical law which was created, or is it a necessary truth? That's sort of the way, I'm not like...
Well, they say that about math. You don't invent math,
right.
You discover math. Because it just exists.
Right, it's
2 + 2 = 4. There's no
other right. Well, again, well, it exists.
You could call them 3 and 5, but it would still be
right. Yeah, it's interesting, right?
Like think of as 4.
Right now, there's God created. You know, there's this question, right? Is the world? Aristotle believed that the world is eternal, right? But maybe you say no. The world's not eternal. We know existence is not eternal. God created the world. The world is not eternal. Or sorry, existence is not eternal. But truth is eternal. And it could be that certain things are truth, but not existence. Like, that 2 + 2 = 4, is that existence, or is that truth? Right? I think that could be perhaps the question, right? At the same time, there are, so that's, yeah, like, this is like, you know, the modern man who, like, we go by logical principles, and so, like, you know, this idea resonates with us more, right? The idea that, I think, that God does that, which is, there are certain truths. Just like God cannot destroy himself, some limitation on his power, it's a necessary truth, right? In other words, can God make 2 + 2 = 5? It's not a limitation on his power if he can't do that. That's just that's an inherent truth. It's not a logical law, right? But there's another side to this. There's another side. The Gemara Maseches Megillah, Daf Yudam Beis, Amar Rabbi Levi, Davarze Mesores Biadeinu Me'avoseinu. We have a tradition. Makom Aaron Eino Min HaMinyan, where the Aaron stood in the Kodesh Kodashim is not part of the mathematical calculation, the dimensions. Why? He said, Tai Dabi Hachi, Aaron Shasa Moshe, Yeshlo Eser Amot L'chol Ruach. So the Aaron, between the Aaron and the Kodesh HaKadosh, right, the Kodesh HaKadosh was this room. Between the edges of each Aaron and the Kodesh Kodashim was 10 amot in each direction. And the Kodesh Kodashim was 20 amos long. You have a problem. Right? So between one end of the Aaron and the Kodesh Kodashim was 10 amos. For the other end was 10 amos. And he said the Aaron didn't take up space, but it's commanded to have certain dimensions. Now, Aaron Gufa Hechal Chakoi, Allah Shmarida B'nei Soya Omeid. So how would you understand this if you were like, you can understand this Gemara not literally, I guess. I don't know what to do with that. Right? Or would this be like 2 + 2 = 5? Or could maybe some miraculously God made it, lengthen out the arrow. Or it's, again, you can always say this is not literal, but like it's hard sometimes to say. Sometimes you have these like fantastic stories in the Gemara that's clearly meant to be not understood literally. This is sort of, he's just telling you, you should realize we have a problem here because we have a tradition that the Aron was these dimensions and the dimensions of the Kodesh Yossi was 20 Amos and there's 10 Amos each side, so like we have a problem here. So, you know, so this seems, this doesn't seem logical here. I'm not sure what to do with that. And then you have the other side, you have someone like the Maral.
But isn't that the beauty of, isn't that what we're supposed to do, right? Emunah Shlema?
Yeah.
You just believe.
Right.
Right? So there's belief versus...
Yeah, so in other words, so I think that's part of this question. I mean...
So isn't consistent with belief the fact that there's stuff that we
don't
know
understand
to be true and we sometimes understand, sometimes don't understand, and so God is just, he exceeds that.
So I think that goes in, so I'm going to get to that. I think that's, I'm going to try to get to that point. It might be, I'm going to come back to you at the end, but like, you know, I'm going to start by just asking, do we believe God is bound by logic? And then do we believe that God is bound by our sense of morality or not? Right? It's the same kind of questions, right? Like these questions are not simply, you know, can God pick up a rock? Can God create a rock that he can't lift? But is there something that's beyond our logic, and what should our emunah be? So it's interesting. I'm saying the Rambam, and that's trying to get to your point, actually, when we finish this. Because the Rambam seems to say, and the Rashba seems to say, when it comes to certain things, like, God cannot create 2 plus 2 equal 5. But it's not a limitation in him. Or we say, no, we have to have such emunah. How much emunah should we have? That something that is inherently, you know, seems illogical, God is still beyond that. I understand that's the question, right? Say that's what we're struggling with here, right? We'll see the application bit, but that's exactly what I'll get to. The Maharal Gvurat Hashem, so he says, he's dealing with the following question. The question is, when Yoshua fought, I think, some of the kings in Canaan, so it says, Shemesh b'givon dom, so the sun did not set. Because I think if it would have set, then he wouldn't be able to run after the king. So he made the sun set. But for apparently the understanding was that for everyone else it was dark, and for the Bnei Israel it was light. So in other words, the sun was still in the sky for the Bnei Israel, and it wasn't in the sky for everyone else. When I read Yeshua, I just thought it'd stay in the sky for everyone. But he's working with this, so it's beyond our discussion why he has to say that. But he seems to understand there was a miracle for us that the sun was up for us and was down for them, which is a logical impossibility. The sun is up or the sun is not up, right? So he says, on the tzarch iyun.
Perception.
Well, yeah, it could be perception, but like...
If the world stopped spinning, we all would have been flung off into space. So,
Good. On the tzarch iyun, im nase neis lechol zeh lechol olam, o lo nase neis zeh rak ba'ofek ahu. Was it for the whole world or only for basically for us? It's in our horizon. Just for Yeshua, the Bnei Israel, the sun stood still. For the rest of the world, it did not. This is very wondrous. It demonstrates the power of God and his miracles. And if you say, how do you describe this? What does that mean? What does it look like? Like it's up for us and it's not up for them? He says, how can the sun be moving? Or really the earth is moving, whatever it is. But how can the sun appear to set and it appears not to set in the very same place at once? Rabbag says there are two opposites with one thing. They can't be together. No, he's not right. That it could be the sun is moving. Again, how we understood it, or whatever. We perceive the sun is setting. But there's the natural, the supernatural, and it's all in the same place. You know, there's the supernatural world, there are different dimensions. There's a natural world, the supernatural world, but it's all But we're living in this world, and there's this natural way of perceiving and a supernatural way of perceiving, and or from something happening to the sun. You can have one thing that can have two different opposites from two different perspectives. And the naturally the sun will be one thing, and supernaturally will be something else. For Yeshua and Bnei Israel, the sun was on a supernatural dimension. I mean, this is the source where I guess the Matrix came from, right? The stomach. I mean, Stama, they are big morale people, right? I don't understand the Matrix so well, but I read the morale, I understand a little better, okay? So I guess he took, what is it, the red pill, the blue pill, or whatever it was? Okay, I don't know. So he says, the rest of the people, they don't need that miracle. It was natural for them. Don't ask, how can we picture this? Because if you say the sun stood for Yeshua only, and the rest of the world it went, that for one part of the world, for the rest of the world, the sun set, and for Yeshua it didn't. There's a echshar. How could it be? He says, it's not a question. He said for Yeshua it was a derech nes, and for the other ones it wasn't a derech nes. So he's the Maral is describing the same thing, two opposites, but God can do it. That's what he describes. I think, by the way, I was thinking, because I was giving a parsha shir in Parshas Choshech, the plague of darkness. So, like, the difference between the plague of darkness and the other plagues is usually, right, the Bnei Israel, let's say they're in their own town and their own wild animals stomping, you know, in Goshen where the Bnei Israel are living, and they're wild animals where the Egyptians are living. By the plague of darkness, so there's a Rashi which says that they went into the Egyptian homes and checked out where all their gold and silver was. So when they asked them for it, they said, oh, we don't know where it is. We don't have any gold and silver. They said, no, you hid it over here and over here and over here. So the question is, how is it possible? I also said, it didn't say that. The text of the Torah seems to indicate that for the Bnei Yisrael, it was light, but it didn't say in Goshen. So there seems to be evidence that the Egyptian and Egyptian and Hebrew would walk together. If Egyptian, it would be darkness, and Hebrew would be light, which seems to be like impossible. How is that? So the Sfarno just said it was like miraculous, and the Torah Tamima said that's a more modern, he's like the end of the 19th century. He said, you know what they had? That they had cataracts. The Egyptians were smitten with cataracts in the eye. So I'm wondering if the Tartini was bothered by this, because it's not logical. You know, you could have the wild animals going in one place and not another place. But how can you have one sun, and how can you have in this world, it's impossible for it to be, you know, sunny and then dark for one group and another group. So as far as I know, God can do whatever. And Tartini said, no, it's cataracts. You're all smit with cataracts.
And this goes to how you understand what a nace is. I mean, does a nace have to happen according to the logical rules that
right.
forth in science?
Right.
Both or, would technically be a nace.
Even if you're using the rules of science, it's still a nace.
Right.
Things concur at that time. Does it have to occur through a method of acceptable rules?
Right.
Or can it be outside the bounds of the rules?
Right, right. And to what extent? I'm saying is like, if it's sun, and the sun is still... When I was thinking of that plague, I was thinking of this, where the sun is here and sun is there, same time. So there's a ness, right? Like there's something that we can't perceive, but it's in the realm of possibility, like, you know, water coming from a rock. That's different than maybe the sun being here and the sun being here at the same time. That just seems different. One sun, maybe, I don't know.
You could say it's a solar eclipse. Yeah, we're on one side.
Yeah. No, but if they're walking together, I'm saying, if they're walking together, same house. And one can't get up, one can. So that's why it's a little...
If you accept that that's how you interpret it.
No, I understand. No, I understand. I understand, yeah. I understand.
So those are the two categories of Rosh. Mm-hmm.
Right, yeah, right, exactly.
They're like so impossible, right. Or it's like inconceivable, it's just...
Right, exactly. Impossible or inconceivable, right.
Yeah. But Yeah. We could conceive it. I mean, it says, so someone clearly conceived that, this, which is why it says it in the book. So we could think of it. We could all imagine it differently. Right.
Can you imagine 2 plus 2 equal 5?
No, okay. That's logically impossible.
That's logically impossible. Yeah. Ah, so the sun being, there being one sun, and it being setting for one person and not for another, you're saying...
logically impossible.
Is that logically impossible, or is that... Or is that
can, again, or is that a, it could be a perception.
Perception, okay. There are,
perception is one thing, but if it's actually happening, that's logically impossible.
Right. Well, again, I'm just saying, the way that the Maral formulates it, it says, Shnei hef, yeah, okay, I hear. Look at the way Rav Gershon Hedech, Liner Rajin, these are Hasidish, we have two Hasidish Rebbe's here, so one him and the Ratzak Lublin. A person must believe with complete faith that nothing is impossible for God, that nothing is impossible for God, and that even the mind of man, I probably wrote that again, and even the mind of man is in the hands of God. Just as we know using our minds that two opposites cannot simultaneously be true, right? God can instill within us a different manner of thinking such that we would be certain that two opposites can simultaneously coexist. There's, God can create in our minds the idea that 2 plus 2 equals 5. Just like God, again, is the law of logic, is that a law or is that an inherent truth, right? Is it anything? This is true because our minds are created and orchestrated by God. Just as we are certain that 2 is greater than 1, God can change our minds such that we would be certain that 1 is greater than 2. It's obviously a different perspective than what's on the other side. And then Rav Tzadok of Lublin says, this is the secret of foreknowledge and free will that the Rizal explained, right? How can man have free will and that God knows what's going to happen? That's like a famous question, right? If God knows what we're going to do, so how do we have free will? Well, that's a topic unto itself. But the way he deals with it, for our perspective, he says, foreknowledge exists on one plane and freedom exists on another. The Rambam solution is, well, when he says that our knowledge is not like his knowledge, because with respect to God's knowledge, freedom is not contradictory to foreknowledge. This is true even though from our perspective, foreknowledge and free will are opposites, and opposites cannot exist. It's only true from our perspective. From God's perspective, opposites can exist, as Maral explains. So you have like this approach that things which we think are inherently opposite. So you have the Maral that later you know a lot of Hasidic rebbes and others sort of use the Maral to talk about how two opposites exist. I think there are three perspectives concerning the interface between God and logic. So either you say like a Rambam, the Rashba, God is bound by the rules of logic that we can discover, right? Then you have this kind of in-between approach, which is maybe God is bound by logic, but we cannot be certain of... We didn't really see this approach, but you can maybe read into one of them. God is bound by logic, but we cannot be certain of any particular limitation since we cannot know the extent of God's powers. Therefore, we cannot say what he cannot do, and we cannot know with certainty that the law of logic we discover necessary truths. In other words, we just don't know. In other words, maybe, I don't know, like just like, you know, we thought the years, thousands of years ago, right, the world was flat. Maybe somehow we're going to think in years from now that 2 plus 2 is 5. Can't be, but maybe not. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to conceive of that. So that's the kind of in-between kind of situation. And then the last is God is not bound by logic. God created logic as well. God's not bound by logic. But there are three possibilities here. Again, you know, so it's easier, obviously, to say that, again, do you look at 2 plus 2 equals 5? Can God destroy himself? That's hard. That's even harder. Can God destroy himself? Right? What do you think? Can God destroy himself? Because your God's bound by logic. Is there a way that he can, and maybe we just don't understand it? Okay, right. So that, I'm saying, God's bound by logic, or maybe somehow, right? Or God is not bound by logic. Right, so I think that this is a machlokes, that you know how different Jewish thinkers approach this. And I think going to your point, Yoav. So I was thinking about this question about can God create a rock that he can't lift, and is God bound by logic? And how we view God, does God have to be logical? We would like to think that God is logical. You know why? Because we're supposed to be an Or LaGoyim. So I was thinking about how do we become an Or LaGoyim? So I wrote here, do you think that God is bound by our sense of morality? You think? What do you think? You think God is bound by our sense of morality? What do you think about that?
Well, our sense of morality is all based around what we learned from the Word of God. So
not only that.
I would think, what do you mean not only that?
You don't think that there are certain positions that the Torah takes now that are countercultural?
I think that at some point... anything and everything went, but we've figured out how to reinterpret things so that it works within the framework.
Right. So isn't it to some extent like a question of how hard do we have? It's a question of how hard do we want to reinterpret or so that it fits into our sense of morality? In other words, I wonder if this question about is God bound by logic, to what extent does it impact how we think about challenges that we have about certain mitzvos or certain things that happen that are beyond our understanding? Do we have emunah pshuta, right? And we're not like, just like say, we have faith in God that whatever decides. Or do we try to figure out how it makes sense? Because God is logical, God is reasonable. You know what I'm saying? Like, in other words, this question, I think, to some extent, again, I think we all relate to this a little differently, right? In other words, you can look about it in terms of things that happen in our lives, you know, how we deal with certain challenges that we have. We try to make sense of it all because God has to be logical. Right? There are people who say, you know, this is a kapara, or this happened because of this, or this happened because of that, right? That whole approach, by the way...
They're rationalizing,
right? That whole approach is because we need to feel that God is logical. Or else what? He's left us, or like God doesn't love us anymore. Maybe I say, like, I don't even think that way. I'm not judging. What I'm saying is one way is not even to think that way. Why? Because God is beyond logic. So maybe it's beyond our logic, and we're not going to understand. We're not, you know. We say Gamzu Latova. I still love that line. Gamzu Yovers Gamzu. I'm going to say it in the Drusha once, by the way. Okay. I love that line. Now, he had a good vort once. He shared with me. He said that there's a difference between Gamzu Yavor and Gamzu Latova. Gamzu Yavor means, tell me if I get this wrong, but Gamzu Yavor means like this too shall pass. Like, in other words, I don't like what's going on now, and in the future, you know, something good will happen. But instead we say Gamzu Latova, it's very different. Even though what the negative is happening now, I'm going to use it, it's for good, I'm going to use it for something good to transform myself, make myself better. I'm totally going to use that one. So you'll have it here first. It's beautiful. But what I'd say is another approach is to say, I have emunah, this is God's will. I'm not even thinking about, you know, does it make sense or not make sense? I have emunah pshuta, that this is it, right? So that's one way of thinking about it.
And what is the source of the emunah?
So I don't know. You're right, it's a question. What's the source? Why do we believe in God? Like, once we believe in God, once you've done enough...
But can we take that away? Can we take logic out of that equation? Isn't part of the reason we believe in God is
because it's certain logical principles. Yeah, it's a hard thing. Yeah, it's a little bit of circular, right? I think it's a little circular, I think. You know, what gets us to... It could be like once you achieve that state of emunah. I think there is something in the book about different sources of emunah, like, and it's compelling, what's more compelling, less compelling, what leads to emunah. Okay, that's a topic. It's an important question. Right, once we have that relationship for whatever reason, you're right. Because if you have enough questions and you're like, this doesn't make any sense, or once somehow you have that emunah for whatever reason, then it's that. Yeah, it's very hard to articulate why we believe in God, right? I mean, like, because then, like, okay, it's now I'm 98% sure, but now because this something bad happened to me, I'm now down to 94%. Or, like, I'm not sure how to calculate that, but I think it's general. In other words, if you have emunah, you're not going to try to rationalize when things happen. You can say, God's beyond logic. Maybe, he might be.
God's beyond my understanding.
My understanding, right. So, and then I was thinking of something else. You just think. My next question is: how do we view ourselves as being a light unto the nations if we observe mitzvot that may not seem to be moral? How do you deal with that? I was thinking about that question. You understand? In other words, when we are told to be an or lagoyim, a light to the nations. So how are we if God is beyond morality, or is, you know, if you know, then maybe something is morality and there's God, and maybe certain things are societally immoral and some things. I don't know. It's irrelevant because, right, I have emunah. That's the right thing. How do we view ourselves as being an or lagoyim? Like when you think about that term, that we're a light unto the nations, that we teach the world.
Because if it fits into our moral system, then we believe that that's the correct moral system to follow. So therefore they should try to emulate us because we're doing the right thing, whether or not they think it's a good thing.
Right. So
you could be the light in your own way. I mean, that's the mantra today, right?
Right.
Your own thing.
Right.
So if you're doing the way you believe is correct, then you are the light.
Right.
To the other nations,
outside,
they might not like it.
Right.
Yeah, outside of the Torah, morality is a human construct.
Like, right.
You know, humans decide what's moral or immoral,
right.
And that's where religion kind of comes and clarifies it. And the Torah clarifies it for us, and that's, you know,
right.
Just because it doesn't fit with what society believes is moral doesn't make it
right. So immoral. I happen to think that the more that we believe... This is my last thought for tonight. I think about this. I may be wrong. The more that we sort of take the view that, you know, like God is that God sets a moral code for us and a moral vision for us, and so the more that we grapple with those things that are troubling us, and we try to make him fit, and to the extent that we can make him fit, great. Like the example I think I've given before is like where the Gemara said, you know, we should discriminate against non-Jews, and how many, you know, more modern camps said that was referring to the pagans of old. They followed the Meiri, and it doesn't apply to the non-Jews nowadays. So I think that those of us who struggle with that question are people who believe that God is logical and he operates in logical principles and he does things that are moral, and therefore we're going to try as hard as we can to, when we have questions, to try to make it fit and reinterpret, to make it fit within our, you know, the Torah, within our moral system. Obviously, we have to be faithful to the text. We can't be, you know, sometimes some people are so, you know, they're so into what's, you know, culturally appropriate that they may do things that perhaps they twist the text too much to others' likings. But maybe others, I'd say more in the yeshivish camp, I would say, I'm just saying, are probably less likely to take that position, potentially because they may view that, again, God, morale, you know what it means to be an Or LaGoyim? We do the mitzvot. We're not here to proselytize. We do the mitzvot. We become a holy nation doing the mitzvot. That's what God wants from us. And that's going to be like, that's how we're going to change the world. That's what God means. We don't worry about what the other nations do. We worry about our Torah, our mitzvot. You know, they think that we're silly. They think that we're backward. They think that we're archaic. I don't care. I don't really care. I don't care of reinterpreting. I'm not working hard to reinterpret text, whatever, because God has his own standard, his own logic. So I think this question, I'm wondering, maybe I'm wrong, but I'm wondering if this question of whether God can create a rock that he can't lift, and what our answer to that impacts how we think about things that happen to us in our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, the more that we struggle to try to find logic in things that happen to us in life. Or we say God is beyond, that's emunah. And similarly, when there are certain ethical principles, there are certain principles in the Torah which go against our humanistic ethics, how hard do we work to try to make the Torah coincide with what we think is correct? And how much do we say, no, we have emunah, that this makes sense?
I guess it feels like, let's say, you know, when we're talking about these things that are totally, that are logical,
right,
logical precepts, that seems different from like ethical or moral, right? It doesn't to me seem like a direct one-to-one. If we say that God is bound by logic, he must also be bound by morals, right?
Right.
Like imagine, say, God is bound by logic, because logic is just, like,
inherent truth. Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. And I think they're not necessarily one linking to the other. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you. But I'm just wondering if, like, I wonder if they fit. Like I'm saying, they tend to line up a little bit. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, the rationalists, you know, tend to be the same ones who will struggle to also make the Torah to seem more moral, like the rationalists.
Yeah.
As opposed to the more Hasidic rabbis are more likely to say that no, God is beyond logic and therefore also beyond morale. I saw that parallel. You don't have to say, but I agree with you. There are different levels of this.
Right. You could use similar strategies,
right,
or ways of thinking about the questions.
Okay, so now you know the answer now.